The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we are back and glad you decided to join us. We have two more hours to go. What an afternoon this has been. And we are not done yet. Quite a few things happening this week as week one has arrived. More of your phone calls as well at 855-242-7285. Lisa is in Texas. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Lisa.
Yes, Paul. I wanted to ask you, okay, we've had a lot of things to transpire leading up to this college season. You know, changes, the coach change, the NIL, the transfer portal. What are your expectations for this college football season? Like, what do you think, you know, do you feel like things are just changing for the good or just for the bad?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Lisa. All the things that have happened off the field still don't really affect what we as fans enjoy the most on Saturday. It's the atmosphere, it's the excitement, it's the flipping around from one game to the next, rooting for your team, rooting against other teams. So I don't think you really notice it. I mean, if you're a former coach, you might be able to look down there and see some disparity, but I still don't think it's trickled down to the average fan. And I don't think NIL has affected anything off the field in terms of the fans' enjoyment. Yeah, we may complain all week about how it's different than it was when I played or your grandfather played, but so what? Everything is different. Depending on how old you are, if you're in your 50s, 60s, or 70s, you grew up in an era when you may not even had a color TV in your house, and then you suddenly have satellite, and now you can watch 100 games a day versus two. So everything changes in the world.
Exactly. That's what I want to hear, Paul. Thank you. As a female listener, I always say I love your show. You educate me on everything, and I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much. I that means a lot because we lean heavily on the knowledge of others here. I'm just a button pusher. I mean, you could bring in, you know, somebody from a pet shop and probably do what I do here every day. I'm going to push another button.
Why do you want to talk down on the pet shop?
Well, you're right. Joe is up next in Pennsylvania. Hello, Joe.
How you doing, Paul?
Joe, we are doing great.
I talked to you about 3 weeks ago, and I told you about Lou Holtz. Was it South Carolina in 67? And you told me you were having lunch with him in a couple weeks. Did you have lunch with him?
In fact, I had dinner with him last Monday night. Well, I don't want to act like we went to a restaurant. We were doing an event together. And we sat at a table, and I got to spend a lot of time before and during with Coach Holt. And a more delightful guy I've never met.
Uh-huh. Did you ask him about being in South Carolina in 67?
It was the last thing I was going to ask him before the event ended, and I'll catch him on the next time.
Yeah, I told you the last time I lived like 30 miles from Allentown, you gave me a little bit of Billy Joel after that.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty famous song.
Something. I'm from this little town called Tamaqua, little coal mining town. And
I told you I played in South Carolina for Paul Vito.
And I just wanted to ask, I was going to ask you, what do you think Beamer Ball is going to be? But a couple of people have asked you that already, and you just said their schedule is going to make it rough. But now, you know, Beamer, he's a great recruiter. He's the one who got Clowney to go to South Carolina, Marcus Lattimore, and I don't know if he got Alshon Jeffrey or not, but he got some of those good players to come to South Carolina, and recruiting's the name of the game, right?
It absolutely is. Now, you say that, and I agree. He was one of Spurrier's top recruiters. Maybe he was his best recruiter, but you know, Spurrier didn't hurt either.
Right. Now, you know, sometimes you read things and you become infatuated with it. When I was a young boy, I read about the Titanic in 1962 was the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
In 1958, I read an article about Billy Cannon and the Chinese Bandits. And I want to ask you, Do you think we're they're one of the best SEC teams ever?
I think they are, and I do know a little bit about that. I was able to have lunch once or twice with Paul Dietzel. And
My old coach. Okay.
I remember talking about them. It's so difficult, though, Joe, to compare and contrast decades. And the real reason I say that is that the SEC, by the way, they do the law, they do the lawn on Monday afternoon right outside our window. So we got a guy who, what's he doing out there, Randy?
He's blowing the grass.
Yeah, you can't blow the grass at a television studio in, you know, between 6 a.m. and 3 p.m. when there's not a single show going on live here. You have to wait for the one show that goes live during the daytime hours.
But Landscape Monday, not
that I'm upset about that. Not that the people here that we work with and for care. But anyway, I'm so confused now. I don't even. I'm thinking about. Do we have a portable camera here?
No.
Okay. Because I'm thinking about getting up and walking outside and walking over to this gentleman and say, "You're done for the day."
Uh-huh. Here's a
gift card from Chick-fil-A. Go take a break. Have a Chick-fil-A. Have a drink. Just get out of my hair. Well, that's not a good thing to say either. Hey, thanks for the call. I really do appreciate it. Did I handle that okay? Why is there a suit standing at the door?
Like one. We may be getting escorted out of the building.
There's a guy to the door right now. He's wearing a polyester jacket with a bow tie and horn rim glasses. Does he work here?
No.
Is he one of the bean counters? James is up next in Florida. Hello, James.
How you doing, man?
We're doing very well. Thank you.
Quick, weird question. Would love to know what would Florida State need to do to be considered an SEC team in the near future?
Well, I think, James, that will be dictated by what happens next in college football. If you see movement, if you see any domino falling, and the dominoes are Notre Dame, Oregon, Washington, something happening with the Big Ten. The Big Ten commissioner has said they are not done expanding yet. So if you see that happen, then the SEC will follow suit. I don't think the SEC is going to be aggressive because they still haven't gotten the last two schools in yet. And I'm speaking of Oklahoma and Texas. But should it happen, I think Florida State would be a major contender to get into the SEC.
And that means Miami goes to the Big Ten.
Hard to say. And I think some of it is how attractive Miami is going to be when we get to that point. They could be very attractive. If Cristobal brings the program back, and right now I would bet that he does, then Miami would be in play. I don't see Miami as a natural SEC fit. From all the reasons that are obvious, and anyone who's ever been around Miami fans knows. But Florida State certainly is, as Clemson is.
Okay. Thank you, man.
And somebody made a really good point. It was actually somebody, the program mogul at ESPN made this point the other day, that when conferences go looking to for network partners, they don't look what they used to look at. 15 years ago, when there was expansion and the SEC brought in Missouri and Texas A&M, it was only about 11 years ago when that started happening. Geographical regions mattered. They don't matter as much. What matters now are matchups. When your team's in a game, when your school's in a game, is that attractive? Florida State is attractive. Obviously, we're going to see that on ABC Sunday night. Clemson is attractive. Other schools are attractive. It doesn't matter whether you're overlapping geographical regions or not, like South Carolina or Florida. That's not the key. Let's check out Bradford in Georgia. Hey, Bradford.
Hey, how you doing today?
What's up, Bradford? What's happening with you? Are you in school today?
No, I just got out.
What grade are you in?
I'm in sixth grade.
Sixth grade? What a great grade that was.
Yes, sir.
Wish I was in sixth grade. I would be so much smarter than I was in sixth grade.
Yes, sir.
So what's on your mind tonight, Bradford?
Thinking about Alabama and Utah State game. Just ready for Alabama.
Yeah, Bradford, I think Alabama is going to be ready for Utah State. I heard Coach Saban today say this is a really good Utah State team. They've won a lot of big games, and they have a really good coach, and he has great respect for them, and should be about 38-point game. That would be my bet. We'll take a short break. We are coming back with more of your phone calls right after this.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back here, Monday afternoon. Corky is up next in Florida. Hello, Corky.
Hey, what's up, Paul?
Hey there.
I would love to see Tim Brando face now. He did say that Scott Frost will be the next Nick Saban. Well, what was he thinking about? But anyhow, my thing is, I think Ohio State is a little overrated.
You do?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you why. Yeah, I know they got their quarterback back. They lost two receivers in the first round. If you want to throw Jameson Williamson, three of them. They don't really have nothing but the one receiver coming back. Their defense wasn't all that last year, so the guy that's a Notre Dame fan was asking about the defense. I'm a Notre Dame big-time fan. Our defense is actually better than theirs. I mean, our offense is not, but I don't see them blowing Notre Dame out, and that's the honest truth. And all these people on that Ohio State bandwagon, you're going to fall off of it. I don't know how quick, but it's going to come off. The wheel's going to fall off, and you're going to be like, well, they should have. I'm being serious with you, Paul. Take Georgia in the 17 and take Notre Dame in the 17.
Really?
God bless you. Yeah.
That is funny. And by the way, he mentioned Brando, and we got a lot of blame over the weekend for something that happened happened 4 years ago. Tim Brando was on this show. And it was September 3rd, 2018. Is that right, guys? Yeah. And he was praising Scott Frost. And he said, I'm just going to read this. And it got a lot of play over the weekend. It had nothing to do with us, but once you say something, you're stuck with it. We've all been there. Brando said, Scott Frost is built for success, and I'm going to tell you he will win multiple national titles at Nebraska. He will be competing for a Big Ten title within 3 years and could be the next generation's Nick Saban.
How'd that work out?
Anyway, it happened. There's a – what's the name of the Old Takes Exposed? Is that the name of the website that repurposes all the stupid things that people like Brando and others say? And it within moments of the game ending on Saturday in Dublin, that tweet got out there again under our Twitter handle, because Old Takes Exposed retweeted it from 2018. So Brando has been doing a lot of reacting on Twitter. A lot of blocking of people criticizing him. Let's get back to the calls. And Thad is up next in Southern Cal. Hey, Thad.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, bud?
We are doing great. Thank you for the call.
USC. My wife went there. I went to Appalachian State. She has no clue about football. Now she does. She's like, oh, what's this Oklahoma guy? Now he's going to take all the California guys who play football in the 50 million. It's fine. It's going to be great. Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening to everything you're saying. Not really understanding it, but I'm listening.
Yeah, he came from Oklahoma. We love him. My wife didn't even know anything about USC football.
Okay.
She's like, oh. She went there. They said, fine. It's great. And they're going to be great. They're probably going to win 9 games this year. 12. Next year. They're going to play, what? Oregon. And they're going to have to go over to Notre Dame and play in the cold and whatever. But then they have to go to Big Ten. Okay. How many people in California, because my kids are from California, they're 4 and 6 years old, they do not want to go and play in the Big Ten in the cold, do they? I don't think so.
Well, not every game will be in the cold, just every game after mid-October.
No, I went to Appalachian State. It's cold there, kind of, and I went to Clemson. That's where I grew up. Love their games. Great atmosphere.
Yeah, but you know what, USC? Ted? Decisions with big-time college football are not made on the weather. They're made on marketability and money. And Southern Cal was drowning in the Pac-12. They made a very good deal. I think they'll be successful. They have everything in place, and I think they're going to be on a much bigger stage than playing a bunch of Washington States and Cals and Oregon States and Arizona States, games that do you absolutely no good. Thank you for the call, I think. Kobe is up next in Oklahoma. Hello, Kobe.
What's up, Paul? Called in Friday and kind of got off on talking about the contractual rights and all that. But
right.
I just want to let Thad know, the caller from California, that your coach, tell your wife, she don't know anything about football, and she knows more than you. But wanted to tell you that Lincoln Riley is a fraud. You have a false sense of security. You got no offensive line. You got no defensive line. You got some great skill position players, but you have a coach that don't know how to coach the correct players. Now that I'm going to get off on that, Paul, how are you doing this Monday morning, Monday afternoon?
I am doing great, Kobe. And
now.
Go ahead.
I'd clear that up with Thad, because that's a big disappointment out there in California. I'll just say that right now. You might as well get used to me calling in. But though you come into the SEC, you might as well know my number. Put it in your phone. But what do you think the first – me and you, we determined 2024 OU and Texas coming over. You didn't answer my question with what you thought their – respectively what they do their first year in the SEC. It's a tough conference. I realize that. I know you've been very, very critical of OU over the years for not being able to get it done, and I realize that. But I just think with Brent Venables coming in and being a defensive-minded...
Let me ask you a question, Kobe. Why do you think Brent Venables will be able to do what Lincoln Riley and Bob Stoops could not do?
Because...
Everyone wants to love Bob Stoops, but after that first title early in his career, he mostly choked the big game away.
You're absolutely correct. I will not run from that, and I will not argue that. But Brent, we're starting off on a good note. Brent Venables hadn't ever coached a game of football as a head coach, and he has a better recruiting class without even coaching than Lincoln Riley in the last 5 years. That's just starting out. I know OU ain't going to be world beaters this year. We all get that. 10-2, 9-3, respectively, probably. But under Lincoln Riley, a lot of us OU fans, had a false sense of security. He could always get us there, always had the skill position, didn't have a defense that could play 5A football in the state of Oklahoma can play better defense. Just defense crap the bed every year. It's frustrating. I think a lot of us in Oklahoma are just excited to get back to that smash mouth defense in the 2000s that Bob and Brent and even Mike Stoops had when they got there. A lot of hope and optimism and a lot of reinvigoration there in Norman, man, I'm telling you. I know you're not on the bandwagon, but we are, well, man. But what I want to get to
be, it's not a matter of being on the bandwagon or not. You talk about me being critical of Oklahoma. I've simply just pointed out the obvious.
Sure.
And quite frankly, in relation to the SEC, I think Oklahoma will be helped by getting in the SEC. I don't think they'll have any more difficulty adjusting than anyone else. I mean, it's one of the best football programs in the country, and you're getting in the best league, and I think it helps everything about your program. The recruiting is already at a high level. Now it possibly can go to a higher level.
Right. I just feel like the culture and the better recruiting, obviously the money's going to help, but yeah, I don't know. It's just gonna be one of them things where we have to wait and find out. I know you need the quarterback to compete. What they got ain't gonna cut it. But what do you see? I mean, realistically, if they're going in 2024, what's the first year expectation win loss?
Kobe, I can't answer that until I know what their schedule looks like. And
sure.
But I don't think it's gonna be a whole lot different. Not to minimize the SEC. But in the SEC, if you're at a high level and you've recruited well, you will compete and you can break through. I mean, right now the SEC is going through we don't know about a couple of programs, but you know, can Oklahoma compete with Alabama, Georgia, and Texas A&M? Yeah, I think they can.
Well, recent history says they can't.
I don't know. Well, you're talking about a one-off game, though, is my point.
Sure.
And let's go back to the Georgia game. That was an even game. Of course, you had Baker Mayfield as your quarterback. The LSU.
Blocked field goal at the end from winning that game to going to the national championship.
I agree. The LSU situation. You got blown out by one of the best teams in college football history. I remember watching the Alabama game at the Orange Bowl, and that to me,
they were down 28-0.
Yeah, I mean, that game was one offside call from being a 35-point blowout. And but having said all that, you don't have to. You can get blown out in the national championship or the semifinals and still be a really good SEC team. And I frankly believe Oklahoma can be a really good SEC team. We're up against the break. Thanks, Colby. Appreciate it. We're heading to our segment here, and we have more guests coming up and more of your phone calls. Our next guest has written a book about college football. He's also written a very interesting piece in yesterday's New York Times about how difficult it is to watch college football on television. We'll talk to him about that coming up next.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and we are glad that you are with us. Our next guest is Ben Mathis-Lilly. He had a fabulous piece yesterday in the New York Times. Yes, the New York Times, on why college football is so miserable to watch. The headline, "Does It Have to Be?" He also has a book that will be out tomorrow entitled The Hot Seat: Year of Outrage, Pride, and Occasional Games of College Football. He's a Michigan man. He spent a lot of time following the University of Michigan. He's also a senior writer for Slate. Ben, thank you very much. Congratulations on your book. We appreciate you dropping by this afternoon. Good afternoon.
Hi, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having me on.
We'll get to the book in a second, but I do want to talk about your article. And obviously, it's in the Sunday New York Times. Quite a few people around the country, if not the world, read it. But let's talk about your premise. You go through a lot of football watching, and it can be annoying. But tell us where you are going with your piece.
Well, I wanted to write about how this experience, which is watching college football, which is something that is, you know, some people take a lot of pleasure in and kind of orient their whole lives around in some ways, can be so frustrating. So it's like this thing that you love, that you really like, but at the same time, sometimes it can be extremely frustrating. And so the example I use is when you're watching a game and you've been watching for a half hour, but it started 15 minutes late and there's been, you know, 15 minutes of commercials and a couple replay reviews, and you might at that point start asking yourself, what am I doing here? What am I getting everything out of this experience that I think I'm going to be getting out of it? Or might I be better off spending my time doing something else? That's kind of the whole question of the book, and then the question of the article as well.
Yeah, and listen, it's well established. I work at ESPN, and it is not my job to defend the network, because I have the same issues you do sometimes. You're watching a game, and it does seem like, especially toward the end, it can be interminable. But we also, you know, we're not paying most of the time. We're not paying for games on directly. Yeah, there may be an indirect charge. It's not like Netflix where you have to pay, you know, $20 a month. And you can flip the channel, can you not?
Absolutely. But that's one of the tricky things about it. I talked to this antitrust expert from the University of Michigan Law School, and he explained that, you know, in most situations, from a legal standpoint, if you don't like one brand of dish soap, for example, you could switch to another one. But, you know, if you're a Michigan fan, if you're a fan of a specific team, switching from a Michigan game to a game in the Big 12, it's not quite the same. So it's harder to create competition within that market, as it were, which could be one reason why the broadcasts get so bloated and filled with commercials and filler. On the other hand, as you kind of point out, I think ultimately fans would make the same choices as athletic directors do in that situation. If they're in the room negotiating, because they want the best for their school, they want their team to be the most prestigious, the most important, and they want to be on the big stage, and that means ESPN or one of the other networks. And so I think that's kind of where the article lands, is ultimately all of us would probably make the same choice, as much as we might complain about it.
I watch more college football, Ben, than the NFL, but it does seem like the NFL games move faster. I know your article was more on college football with the season upon us. And did you discover anything in your reporting that other than lip service, the people that run college football are doing anything about this problem? Because I hear them always talking about it, but it still seems like we're dealing with the same issue every year.
Well, you know what? I think that's part of what makes the college football interesting, is that no one person is really in charge. In the NFL, you have the owners, the group of owners, and then obviously Roger Goodell is the commissioner. And those people have final authority, and they can say, for the long-term interest of the game, we're going to try to make sure our broadcasts are lasting 3 hours and they're not interrupted too often. I think a couple years ago they got rid of the whole commercial kickoff commercial sequence because it was driving people nuts. But in college football, there's not really any body like that, as I'm sure you've discussed on your show. You know, the NCAA doesn't have authority over television deals. That's something that's been true for since 1984 because of the Supreme Court. So, you know, as we take this recent example, the Big Ten signing its deal, the Big Ten wants a deal that's as big as the SEC. The SEC wants the deals as big as the Big Ten. And neither one of them are going to defer to the other. And there's no person in charge. There's no group of people in charge to say, okay, let's sit down and figure out, this is, you know, the fans are unhappy with this. It may be hurting our live attendance a little bit. Let's come up with a set of rules that we all agree to that could limit the length of the games. But there's just not really a group that can do that in the NCAA. And so that's why I think is one of the reasons why college football is the way it is.
Ben Mathis Lilly, our guest, his book, The Hot Seat, coming out tomorrow, A Year of Outrage, Pride, and Occasional Games of College Football. So, Ben, You spent a lot of time with Michigan last year. You picked a pretty good year to do that.
Yeah.
Take us through, every book has to have a premise, I think. Take us through how all this came about.
Well, so I wanted to write about college football and coaches in particular, because I think what's really interesting about the college game and makes it different than the NFL or really any other major sport in the United States is that, take the example of Jim Harbaugh, who I wrote about, and Ed Ogeron, who I also wrote about. Jim Harbaugh, you know, went to the University of Michigan. Ed Ogeron is from Louisiana. There's something that's real important to college football programs about having people around them and part of the program who grew up there, who know what their program is all about, who have that kind of regional understanding or understanding what the people are like in a given area. And so I think it's one of the, you know, I wanted to write about the ways that kind of these different parts of America express themselves. And one of the ways they do it, one of the biggest ways they do it is through the local college football coach. And so I thought that was kind of a fun thing to write about and kind of explains maybe why people get so, I named it the hot seat because the topic of whether a coach should be fired or not is the thing that gets people the most fired up usually. And so I thought I was going to write about, to be honest, about Jim Harbaugh probably losing his job, especially when the project got pushed back here because of the 2020 COVID. So I kind of went into it thinking, yeah, even as a Michigan fan, I'm probably going to be writing kind of a book that has an unhappy ending. And then I went to LSU to compare, and I was going to compare. I thought LSU was going to be this program that was thriving by comparison and talk about how Coach O really understood the people down there and had kind of a gotten in LSU into the best shape it could be. And then things worked out differently on the field. So I had a different book in the end, but that's kind of the story behind it.
So on the LSU piece of it, it was just a complete disaster. Although toward the end, even after Ogeron was fired, the team showed signs of life. What did you learn diving into that cauldron?
Well, I think that the lesson I learned was, I guess the way I put it is, when your coach is winning, you see the best of yourself in that coach, and if the coach is losing, you see the worst of yourself. That's something I didn't quite understand when I started the book project. I thought just, you know, these coaches are kind of representatives of the local population, and people see themselves in them, but I didn't realize to the extent to which that can change. And so, you know, when I started the project, it was a lot of praise for Coach O and what he'd done in 2019. And, you know, that this is exactly what the program needed. It is someone who can relate to people down here and who gets along with people and can motivate people and, you know, understands that you're supposed to have a good time playing football, right? So that was kind of the explanation that you would hear for why he was so successful. But then as things started going south, I followed the message boards, I followed the podcast and the press, and you started seeing people from Louisiana say, you know, this guy's putting on a bad face for our state. You know, this guy's making us look bad because, you know, people make fun of the way he talks and, you know, and he's not as sophisticated as Nick Saban, is someone they always compare themselves to for obvious reason that Saban was there for a long time. So it was really interesting to see the way that impression changed. You know, they were proud of him 1 minute. And obviously when a coach is winning, people are proud of him. But the way that he kind of lost popularity was interesting to me. And by the end, I think a lot of people were happy to bring in an outsider, Brian Kelly, because people said, oh, he's from Notre Dame. That's a kind of a well-known school, well-regarded school. He's a smart guy. He's going to represent us well in a way that Coach O may not have with his kind of personal transgressions and some of the rumors that were going around about him at the end. So I thought that was a pretty interesting thing that I found out.
In our remaining moment or so, Ben, I do want to talk about Jim Harbaugh, and this is kind of a weird question considering all the things that I've said about Jim Harbaugh. But as you entered that season, I mean, there was a lot of criticism. There was also some defending of him. Take us through that odyssey, which ended in the national semifinals against Georgia.
Yeah, I think that what I found out when I started talking to people around the Michigan program, even before the season, was that as negative as I was personally about his chances, and I was always a big fan of his and I wanted it to work out for him, as negative as I was and as pessimistic as some of my friends were people online and national pundits, people around Michigan, they didn't have that. They really believed that he could turn it around. And I think part of it is, and I get into this in the book, he just goes back so far with so many of the people there, and he goes back so far with the program, and he believes what they believe about how a school should run and how a football team should run, and all the kind of the Michigan man stuff that people make fun of sometimes. But they all really believe that, and they knew that he believed that. And so I think within the program, within the kind of the coaching community, as some people I talked to had coached with him, they were a lot more, I wouldn't say that any of them guaranteed me that he was going to have a good year. But I think a lot, and not many of them were probably as surprised as I was by what he was able to do.
Name of the book is Hot Seat. Ben Mathis Lilly joining us as piece worth reading in the recent Sunday New York Times. Ben, all the best with the book launch. Thanks for coming by. We would love to stay in touch. All the best.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Ben Mathis Lilly, the senior writer for Slate Magazine, joining us, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and that should not be breaking news. Let's continue.
Somehow it is.
I don't know. I'm just, could be.
Yeah.
This says Joe PA, so it looks like Joe Pa. Wouldn't that be an amazing call if Joe Pa was calling us?
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, good afternoon.
I don't even like Joe Pa. What you talking about?
Come on, respect the
Joe
dad.
Pa had longevity. That was it. One national championship in all those years. You got to be kidding me. The only smart thing he didn't do was go into the pros. I remember when Matt Millen was on Johnny Carson, and they asked Matt Millen and Johnny Carson, when Matt Millen told Coach Paterno he was going to be a linebacker, Joe Paterno told Matt Millen, you can't play linebacker. And Matt Millen said, well, Joe, you can't coach. That's all I remember.
That's funny.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I have a lot of what-if questions I'm not going to hit you with today. And I mentioned Lou Holtz before, but I'm going to say I think if Lou Holtz had stayed at one school for a long time, he would have – I don't know how many national championships he would have won.
I think the problem with Lou was that he was an exhausting personality. And I say that with great affection for him, but I've worked with him before in his prime. And coaches do that. There's some coaches in the SEC. Well, I'll save it for another time. But they tend to wear out their welcome. And ultimately at Notre Dame, which was his best and most successful stop, he did begin to wear people a little bit raw. And, I mean, he was brilliant at NC State. I mean, the biggest mistake he ever made was leaving NC State to go to the New York Jets. That was
on the Jets, yeah.
After that, I mean, he kind of ran – I think he ran afoul of Frank Broyles at Arkansas, and then he took the Minnesota job, and then he left that. And, by the way, he still had a brilliant career. And you can't lose sight of that. But he had a lot of jobs, but he also coached for 40-some-odd years. Cat Daddy is next.
Big Paul, he's looking good and sounding good. Look at him. That Nebraska football game, I'm going to tell you what, I bet them Nebraska people are just all beside themselves. That's all they've been talking about.
I think they are so numb right now that they are beyond caring.
Well, you probably got that right. Well, let me tell you.
And by the way, if you don't know what I'm talking about, let me refer you to the Will Muschamp era at South Carolina.
Memories I could forget. Let me tell you a funny story, Paul. Lady come in the liquor store the other day. She rolled up to Cherokee, North Carolina to visit the Indian reservation up there.
Yeah, sure.
And she come in the liquor store and she was telling me while she was up there, her car broke down. And a Native American came up there on horseback. And he said, ma'am, you got a problem? She said, yeah, my car broke down. I'm off out of gas or what? He said, well, there's a gas station about 5 miles down the road. I'll carry on my horse. So she gets out the car, jumps on the horse. They ride on down there to the gas station. About every mile, the man's yelling, yee-haw, yee-haw.